You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
I did it again. I left my notes on the desk on the other side of the room and had to quickly run across during the intro without pulling the laptop down. I always forget that this is plugged in, that the headset is plugged in. And I almost pulled the whole setup down, the laptop, the lights, the lot of it. But yeah, we got there in the end. But I almost did it again. Welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min as ever. I'm your host, Harry Simeon. I want to give a big shout out to those joining us on the live stream at the moment, to the Somerset Guna, one of our channel members who says, morning all, show Harry your support by tapping the like button. Yes, please do so. Big hello to Bad Boy and to Nodas Madas as well in the chat. Hope you're all well. What are we going to discuss today? Well, first of all, I want to give you a little bit of a heads up for the show that is coming up a bit later on. For those of you who watch us on YouTube, it will be streamed live at 4:30. And for those of you who listen to the podcast, it will be available first thing tomorrow morning. But I'll be joined by Dan Mountney, formerly of the Islington Gazette, has plenty of experience of covering Arsenal at close quarters, and is now with the Guna fanzine. So Dan will be joining me. We'll be having a discussion around some of the key topics involving our club at the moment. So come and join us for that one. Big hello to Liam Rushworth, to Steve Stone, to Talal, and to Russ Morgan, all in the chat as well. Right, let's begin by discussing Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Now, I think we can all agree that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's form this season hasn't been quite what we had hoped for. You know, we signed him down to a new contract. Everybody was absolutely delighted about that. Everybody was over the moon. Everybody was thrilled because, as I felt, and I made it clear on this podcast a number of times, actually, during the course of the summer transfer window, the most important bit of business that Arsenal were going to do was to tie Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang down. He's been so key to Arsenal in the last couple of years. I know it hasn't been the most successful few seasons, but can you just imagine where we would have been without Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, without his quality in front of goal? You know, we're talking about a guy with an incredible goal record since joining the club. Maybe not the most natural of leaders when you're talking about, you know, whether or not he should be the captain. You know, but somebody who has previously led by example. I don't think anybody can dispute that. Yes, it hasn't gone very well for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang this season. But as I keep saying to you guys, I am confident that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang will turn it around. We know the qualities there. We know the abilities there. And if you look back through his career historically, he has always scored goals. Another thing I always say is that this is the first real blip that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has had since signing for Arsenal. And we've got to put that into context as well. But he's given an interview, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He's spoken to Sky Sports about it. He's been talking about his form this season. And I thought he was really, really, really open and honest. And let's touch on what Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had to say. He said, from the beginning of this season, I was struggling a lot, but I think this is part of football. Certainly is. We gave a lot at the end of the season to win the FA Cup and to qualify for the Europa League because it was really important for the club. Sometimes you have ups and downs and you have to manage as best you can. I tried my best and until now, it was not the best performance for me. I'm still positive. I think I can turn this around. He also went on to admit that he found it quite difficult to lead the side at a time when he knew he himself was not performing to the standards that he'd set previously. He said, it's really hard to manage both, but you have to be as positive as you can because the team needs you. I always try to give my best, not only on the pitch, but also in the dressing room for the guys. Sometimes it's hard and maybe you're not in the right mood, but you have to find a way to change it and give positive vibes for the guys. At the moment, we are playing well and we have to follow this way. If we win the couple of games that are coming, we can turn around the situation. We are not so far from the top six, so this is the moment to be back in the competition. So Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, despite talking about the fact that he feels his own performances have been below par, you know, it's... I'm sorry, I've been distracted by one of the comments. What I was trying to say is, although his performances have been under par, he acknowledges that Arsenal are playing really well at the moment. And that is a positive, of course. And, you know, if you think about sort of how our performances have taken an upturn in the last few weeks, imagine what they would be like with a fully firing Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang as well. So, you know, there's more to come from this Arsenal side. You know, we all acknowledge that the start of the season wasn't ideal. There were lots of problems. But I actually like the fact that Aubameyang's given this interview, because there were a lot of people starting to question whether we were having a Mesut Ozil 2.0, in the sense of, is it someone who a lot of the fans feel just has dropped his intensity and is less caring about the situation since signing a new contract. I don't think that was ever the case with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. I don't even think it was the case with Mesut Ozil either, but there were people questioning the commitment levels. And I think this was a good interview from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to give. And I think the most interesting point is the bit about having to lead a team and always be the standard setter, and always sort of be that vocal leader behind the scenes when you yourself know that you're not quite at the top of your game. And your teammates probably know that as well. Well, they definitely know that. And so to then be in that position where you're having to demand from others, it can be an awkward space to be in, can't it? You know, you're trying to demand from others, but you know yourself, you're not at that level. So yeah, it is a difficult situation to be in. I think we can all acknowledge that. And I think it was a very good, honest and open interview from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and one that I think should relieve some of the pressure on him from some of the fans. Big hello to Liam Rushworth, to Steve Stone, to Default TY in the chat, to Keir Ellis, to Anton Pashkulev. Welcome to the show. Some of you saying good evening. I'm assuming you're on the other side of the world. Where's Marco Williams? There he is. Marco Williams says, yeah, finally, I caught a live stream. Afternoon, Gooners. Welcome to the program, mate. And Sean M, one of our members, says, afternoon, guys. Same as that, Marco. So I'm assuming you guys normally watch on the catch up, but yeah, welcome to a live stream. What else have we got here? No, that's Madass says, you could tell Harry is Greek. This is the longest 2 minutes in world history. We are never on time. Aaron Matthew says, big up Harry from sunny Dubai. Leaders, though, might go through personal adversity. We'll always find ways to inspire the team nonetheless. That should be his legacy at Arsenal. It's a good point. You know, they should find ways to inspire the team, even when they're not at the best. I agree that natural leaders do that. As much as I love Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, I love everything he's done for Arsenal. I love the way he's performed since joining the club overall. I think we can all agree that he isn't that natural leader, though. He isn't the Patrick Vieira, the Tony Adams. He isn't a John Terry. He isn't a Rio Ferdinand, a Roy Keane. Do you know what I'm saying? He's not that type of player for me. And that is somebody's character. You either have that or you don't. You know, it's a character trait. I don't think you should knock people for not having it. You know, it's just some people just don't. It's a natural thing. And that's my kind of issue with Aubameyang being named as the captain. You know, Aubameyang was given the captaincy very much with the view of, this guy currently is our best player at the moment. He leads by example week in, week out. And that's why he is suited to the role. Now, you could argue that in terms of, you know, in terms of his other attributes, his other traits, maybe he's not the best suited to the role. But that's what the club decided to do. I've said it before. Now that you've made that decision, now that you've given him the captain's armband, you can't reverse it. I don't think you can't just pull it away from him and say, we don't think you're fit to be the captain anymore, or XYZ is more suited to the role, so we're going to throw the captain's armband that way. You can't do that now. So I don't know if this is the right term, but you're kind of stuck with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang now as the club captain. And when he's not performing at the top of his game. We've just got to accept that. He's not going to go around the pitch beating his chest like Tony Adams would, like Patrick Vieira would, shaking people up, trying to get the maximum out of them. Some will argue, well, then he shouldn't be the captain. And I actually agree. I didn't ever think that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was captain material based on his character, not on his performances, because his performances have been pretty good overall, I'm talking about, since he signed for the club. So that's where I am on that. But as I said, you can't change that now. That decision has been made. And I think you've just got to move on and accept that if he's not leading by example, then, you know, you're probably, whether he's doing that or not, you're still not going to get that other element, that old school style captain that we so often refer to. Those players very rarely exist anymore, I think, let alone within one football club. I mean, how many captains can you count now in the Premier League that you would say are sort of in the same mold as a Tony Adams or a Patrick Vieira, in the sense of their leadership style? There are very few. You could probably count them on one hand. And so maybe we're expecting something that just is so difficult to come by nowadays. And maybe our expectations of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang as a captain need to be readjusted. But that's just my view on that. SLD Ant says, news on a Martinelli injury. We heard that he should be back in training, within a number of days. It looks like the Crystal Palace game is going to come too soon for Gabriel Martinelli, but he could be in contention for that game against Newcastle United on Monday night. So that's a positive. Going back to Aubameyang's comments, Steve Stone says, it must be exhausting trying to lift a struggling team as a captain when off form yourself. Agreed. Mohammed says, I kind of wish he did the interview when things were at their lowest. Fair point. Liam Rushworth says, Oba deserves time to prove to us that he is still amazing. Marco says, sorry, but I'm standing by Aubameyang. Out of all the signings, he's been the most successful post Sanchez. Bro scored 20 plus goals three seasons straight with our midfield. Yeah, great points. Fantastic points. A couple of you confirming in the chat the news on Gabriel Martinelli and the fact that he is close to returning to training. Xander says he's in training today, which I'm going to trust you on that. I haven't seen anything yet. Let's see what else we've got here. Big hello to Chris Pantelli, referring to the fact that Dan Mountney will be joining me later on, formerly of the Islington Gazette. Says, good afternoon, Harry. Hope you're doing well. As a local lad like yourself, I used to buy the Islington Gazette every Thursday and look forward to reading it. But now I live in the Midlands, I can't. I'm sure you can read most of it online, Chris. Check it out. Melford James says, morning, Harry, from Toronto, Canada. Love your content, Melford. Thank you so much. Harry Land, another one of our members, says, Oba isn't a robot. Most strikers go through goal droughts. He carried us for a long time, so it's only right other players step up and carry him until he recaptures his form. He'll be back. I agree with that. What else have we got here? Zissi on Facebook says, form is temporary, class is permanent. So it goes. Now with Partey and Martinelli coming back, Saka settling on the right, and the addition of Smith Rowe and Laka hitting some form, Oba will come good. Everything is now in place for him to shine. I agree. Keir Ellis says, get that video like, chat. Come on, you Gunners. Yes, smash the like button if you haven't already. Is very, very much appreciated. Talal says, if we can get Aubameyang firing, we can make a sustained bid for the top four. Completely agree. Graham Sutherland says, Oba is more club captain than team captain. That's a really interesting point and a really interesting way of looking at it, actually. Big thank you to Graham for that. Anton questioning Mikel Arteta's. Mikel Arteta didn't give Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang the captaincy. Let's remember that. He says, so Arteta's plan to change the mentality of the club is to give the captaincy to someone who doesn't have the mentality. Aubameyang was not given the captaincy by Mikel Arteta. Aubameyang was given the captaincy after that whole Granit Xhaka thing. That's when he got the captaincy. Yes, Mikel has the power to change that. But as I've already said, I don't see how you can give the captain, or your senior players can be given the captaincy, who at the time is scoring goals for fun, has just won you the FA Cup pretty much single-handedly with a brace in both the semi and the final, has been so good, so key to the side. I don't see how, as Mikel Arteta, you can come into the club and say, sorry, Pierre, I know you're scoring 20-plus goals a season. I know you're leading by example week in, week out, but I don't think you have the mentality, so I'm going to take that captaincy away. You'd have pissed the guy right off, to put it quite frankly. And, you know, there was obviously a lot of concern about what Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's future was going to be. Was he going to sign on the dotted line, extend his stay at Arsenal? That would have been another negative in his mind when he would have been weighing up his options. So I don't think Mikel could have come in and taken it away from him. And, you know, yes, this is a blip. Yes, it's not going great, but it is what it is. You know, where do you go from here? Do you now decide that he's not the right man and hand it to someone else? Again, I think you piss the player right off. And I think it is just unnecessary right now. I think people can be leaders on the pitch without wearing the captain's armband. So I'm not too fussed about who has it, if I'm completely honest. Banos says KT deserves the armband. Yeah, I think a lot of people will agree with that. And, you know, Marco agrees. He says Kieran Tierney should take over from Aubameyang. You know, I would like to see Kieran Tierney one day captain in the Arsenal, but I don't think he's been there long enough yet. I don't think we need to add that pressure to him at a time when we're just starting to see the very best form from him. And again, I don't want to rumble things with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. That's how I look at it. I know people will say that managers need to be ruthless, need to make big decisions, big calls. But for me, that is one that would be counterproductive rather than productive. Ben Taylor, going back to my comment on the old school captains, he says Henderson is probably the only old school captain I can think of. I completely agree with that. What else have we got here? Ashton Ormond says people used to trash Fabregas for not being Patrick Vieira or Tony Adams, but he was a good captain. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. There are different captaincy styles, aren't there? There are captains, in my opinion. There are two types. Look, you either go with the guy who is a natural-born leader, is the most vocal, is popular in the dressing room, keeps people performing to a certain standard, or failing that, if there's no standout candidate, you go with your best player. Because that player, more often than not, will lead by example. Fabregas was that second type of captain, someone who would more often than not lead by example. And Fabregas cared. You know, a lot of people kicked off about the way he left to go to Barcelona and all that, and that it wasn't ideal, obviously. But I don't think you can sit with your hand on your heart and say that during Cesc Fabregas's Arsenal career, he didn't care about the team. He didn't show passion. There was no desire. There was no fight. I think that's just nonsense. And that's just people bitter about the way he moved on. But it's a great point. You know, there are different types of captains. You know, I thought Robin van Persie was a decent captain. But again, Robin wasn't the Patrick Vieira, Tony Adams type. But he was someone that you could rely on the football pitch to deliver a certain level of performance. And so often he dragged us through games that we had no right to win. And that's the that same thing, I think, can be said of Cesc Fabregas. Xander makes this comment on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He says, his lack of goals has only highlighted the weaker side of his game. The opposite of lacquer, when he isn't scoring, he offers a lot of other aspects. It doesn't mean Ober is rubbish now, though. The goals will come. Yeah, Aubameyang is a certain type of player. We all know that. We all recognize that. And so why people are so surprised by the fact that he doesn't offer much else other than goals is beyond me. He's never offered much more than goals. It's the way he is. You know, there's been lots of great strikers over the years that have offered absolutely jack shit to the football team, apart from putting the ball in the back of the net. And you just have to accept that some strikers are like that. Great. Look, if you do bring more to the table, then happy days. But there are lots of strikers that you could say the same about. So it's not, it can be an issue when the team aren't playing well as a whole, but it's not the be all and end all for me. At the end of the day, he's putting the team to score goals. And if he does that, nobody's going to say a word. Has he been doing it lately with the regularity we would have liked? No, he hasn't. But we know he's got the quality to get there. And I'm sure he will get there again. Russ Morgan says, Oba is no captain. He wouldn't front up to the cameras when we were playing badly. Yeah, this is a good point. And this I agree with. I feel like it was poor form from Aubameyang to avoid that kind of responsibility during that really shit period we were going through and allow some of the youngsters to front up to the cameras. If I was the captain, I'd be saying, nope, I'm the skipper. This is partly my responsibility. I'm going to front up and I'm going to handle the media. I do agree with that. And I can understand why people see that as a bit of a black mark against Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang in this whole captaincy debate. AM says the issue is not the drought. It's the action and attitude during the drought to inspire others. Another indication in the decline of the club, Arsenal is a low priority to the Cronkies. I'm not sure what the Cronkies necessarily have to do with the kind of the attitude of the players on the pitch. I don't particularly have any affection towards the Cronkies. I feel like it's a little bit harsh to blame them maybe on this. Let's go to some more of your questions in the chat. Liam Rushworth asks, is the Eve Bissouma rumours true? To my understanding, Arsenal see him as a potential suitor for the future, not for this transfer window. If a deal is going to be done, it will be done in the summer. My understanding is that he's somebody who's on the list, if you like, somebody that Arsenal are looking at. We heard reports from Chris Wheatley at football.london that contact had been made with Yves Bissouma's agent, that he enjoys a close relationship with Gabriel from their days at Lille, that he is interested personally in a move to Arsenal. But if a deal is going to happen, it will only happen in the summer. So that information comes from Chris Wheatley at football.london. I'm not taking credit for that. That is what Chris's report said on there. And Chris also put out a brilliant interview today, an exclusive interview with Unai Emery, talking about his Arsenal days. And I think we'll probably touch a little bit on that during our second podcast today. So stay tuned for that. Aaron says, afternoon, Harry and the chat. Great show. Been listening since March last year and has got me through the lockdown. So thank you, Aaron. Thank you so much, mate, for your continued support. And as I always say, I'm delighted when I hear that this helped people. This podcast is helping people get through a really weird time at the moment. Big hello to former Arsenal man Kevin Campbell. He says, hi, Harry. Hope you're well. Have a super day. You too, mate. Thanks for joining us in the live chat. As always, really appreciate it. Marco Williams asks, is Partey starting in Thursday's game? Now, we don't know is the answer to that. We don't know if Thomas Partey is going to start. We know that he will, or we understand that barring any setbacks, Thomas Partey will be available for selection. Whether Mikel Arteta decides to risk him from the start or not remains to be seen. So we're going to have to wait and see on that. I can't give you a clear answer on that. Me personally, I don't, given Arsenal's decent form at the moment and the fact that we don't feel like we're desperate like we were going into that Spurs game, I would probably leave him on the substitutes bench, if I'm honest. I'll probably leave him on the bench, look to incorporate him later on in the game into the side with a 15-20 minute cameo, if obviously the circumstances allow. It obviously depends on the game state. But I'd probably look to incorporate him late on in the game, if possible, with the view to him being ready to start against Newcastle on Monday. That's my take on it. But of course, we don't know yet. And I wouldn't be surprised if he starts. I equally wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't. But in answer to your question, we don't know. Only Mikel Arteta knows whether he will... he will be fit enough to start that game from the beginning. Big hello to Chima. Hi, Harry. You're doing a great job. Thank you so much, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Just looking through some of the rest of your comments. Hold fire on the questions. I'll come to those in a minute. Just want to give you guys a little bit of a heads up. If you haven't already, make sure you smash that like button. I can see there's over almost 200 of you watching us right now across the multiple platforms. That's across Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, and at YouTube at the minute. If you are watching us on YouTube in particular, make sure you hit that like button, subscribe to the channel if you're new. And if you're interested, you can now become a Chronicles of a Gooner member. You probably see some of the guys in the chat. They've got the little icon next to their screen names when they're putting comments in there. That is because they are members of the channel. If you want some more information on how that all works, what the perks are, and why we're doing it, then click on the link in the description. It will take you to a page that explains the three different tiers that we have. You can decide which, if any, suit you. And of course, if you wish to support the podcast and assist me in providing you with even more content than we're already doing at the moment, that's how you can do it. So yeah, check that out. Really appreciate it. Right, let's go back to the live chat box. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the transfer stuff later on. There's a couple of questions in there about it. Let me pick up one or two, actually. Somerset Gooner says, Isco loan still on the cards? I don't think it's one that Arsenal are persisting with. I've got to be honest. That's my understanding. I think that it was talked about, and he is somebody that Real Madrid want to move on. I'm not 100% sure that Arsenal are actually interested in bringing Isco to the club right now, though. That's my honest view. That's what I believe to be the case right now. I saw a question about Manchester United somewhere, and I do want to touch on this because I did put it down in my notes to discuss Manchester United's rise to the top of the Premier League and maybe how Arsenal could potentially follow that blueprint. I know we don't have the financial muscle of Manchester United right now. Forgive me, whoever put that question in. I can't find it in the live chat because it's constantly updating. But I think it was something along the lines of, is Manchester United's position at the top of the Premier League sustainable? And only time will tell, won't it? Only time will tell. But a lot of people gave Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a lot of stick, me included. I didn't think he was cut out for the job. I called him a PE teacher. I felt like Ole was someone who was just so overwhelmed and delighted to be in the job that actually didn't have the authority necessarily to oversee this group of egos and develop them into a good football team. What Ole's done, though, I think, is just kept it simple. He's picked a defence and a defensive midfield. I think that's the most important part of this Man United side right now. That double pivot of McTominay and Fred, or Matic and Fred, or whichever two of the three he goes with. But that double pivot has been key in allowing the Rashfords, the Martials, the Bruno Fernandeses, the Pogbas to go on and play their football. And if you've got attacking talent, most of the time, you just need to take the shackles off. And I feel like at Arsenal, under Mikel Arteta, at times we've struggled with that. The shackles have been on. And as a result, players, attacking players, creative players, expressive players, haven't been able to go out there and do their thing and impact games. Ole's done the complete opposite. Credit where credit is due. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has turned Manchester United around, and they're at the top of the Premier League with a game to come against Liverpool at the weekend that could be big, really big for both sides. So is it sustainable, their position at the top of the Premier League? Only time will tell. But I think Ole is a good example of a manager who hasn't really tried to overcomplicate things, hasn't tried to bog his team down in too many tactics. He's built a foundation upon which he's good, creative attacking players, obviously, that cost an absolute fortune. So it's not something that everybody can mirror, but he's done that and he's allowed them to then go on and express themselves. And that's what's winning them football matches at the moment. Big thank you to Melford James, who's just signed up to our membership scheme while we're live on air. Melford, thank you so much, mate. Really, really appreciate your support. Make sure you click on the link in the community tab. There's a members only post that will take you to the Discord server where you can join us as we're discussing Arsenal around the clock at the moment. So do check that out. If the link has expired, I'm not sure, because they only last 24 hours. But what I will do is, after this podcast, I will go and put a new one in there just to be safe for anybody else that signs up as well. But Melford, thank you so much, mate, and welcome. Welcome to the membership scheme. Going back to the Man United thing, Xander says Man United winning the title depends on Bruno staying fit until the end of the season. Yeah, Bruno's been massive. Russ Morgan says, Man United are still favoured by the referees. They've had more penalties in the last 12 months than Arsenal have had in 8 seasons. I completely agree with that. I agree with the fact that Man United are favoured by the referees. It's almost something that is kind of embedded into my mind now. Because, you know, it's just been, that's just the way it's been from when I was a little kid to now. Man United get favoured, and that's the way it is. You know, we just, that's it. This is an interesting question, going back to some comments I made on the gas tank, the 90 Min show. Talawa Shaw says, do you actually think Brendan Rodgers is a fraud? No, look, I think Brendan Rodgers is a decent coach. I think Brendan Rodgers has got some good players at Leicester City, which is obviously largely the reason that they are where they are. I used the term fraud before, probably a little bit strong, but I do think that Brendan Rodgers is overrated. So I do think that Brendan Rodgers gets more credit than he probably deserves, when actually he's got a decent squad there. He's got a decent group of players. Leicester were the champions not so long ago. So for them to be in the position they are now, which is floating around the top four, I don't think they'll sustain that. I think they'll drop off a little bit, probably end up closer to 6th, 7th. But I do feel like that is largely down to the fact that actually at Leicester, he's taken over a pretty good job, in the sense of they've got good owners, they've got a good squad, the recruitment's been good as well. But I just don't see Brendan Rodgers as this next Jurgen Klopp, the next Pep Guardiola, like some people label him. And that's kind of where I stand on Brendan. Decent enough coach, good coach. But will he go on to reach the heights of a Jurgen Klopp, of a Pep Guardiola? I don't think so. But that's just my prediction, of course, and everybody's entitled to their opinions. Big hello to those of you joining us a little bit late. No problem. I understand the YouTube notifications came out a little bit late, which I'm sorry, I have absolutely no control over. It's a little bit annoying, but yeah, it is what it is. Well, look, to make it simple, we're going to be streaming at 12:30 and 4:30 every day UK time, unless work gets in the way and I have to slightly adjust the times. You'll notice that on Monday, when I was on the 90-minute gas tank, I slightly adjusted the stream time from 4:30 to 5. That will happen from time to time, but I'll always notify you guys. The videos will be scheduled, so you'll be able to check in and see. But unfortunately, sometimes that just can't be helped. It's the nature of the job. Let's move on to a little bit of transfer news before we start to wrap up this edition of the podcast. We're going to start with the update on the future of Sokratis. Now, it was understood that Genoa were leading the race to sign the former Greek international defender. However, according to Calcio Mercato, an Italian outlet, they say that the Genoese club have cooled their interest in the Greek defender. And they've cooled their interest because, to their knowledge, Sokratis is in negotiations with other clubs too. They want a sure thing. They want a guaranteed transfer. Genoa are languishing in 17th place in Serie A. A club of their size should not be down there. They are really struggling, but they're desperate. And they're desperate to bring in a central defender. I don't think that Genoa want to waste their time on somebody who's not sold fully on going there. We understand that Real Betis have inquired about Sokratis' availability as well, and would be looking to take him away from Arsenal during this transfer window. So it seems like Sokratis has got some options on the table, and Genoa are not happy to play second fiddle. Either he shows that that's where he wants to go and they'll make their move, but they're not willing to run the risk of putting their eggs all in Sokratis' basket and ending up at the end of January without having brought in a centre-half. So that is where they stand on that right now. Interesting as well, because Sokratis spent a lot of time in Italy earlier on in his career, played for Genoa, played for AC Milan, and you'd have thought that that probably feels like a little bit more of a natural move. I'm assuming he's got an understanding of the language, if not a fluent one, at least a basic knowledge, a basic understanding. So yeah, it's interesting. I would have thought that Genoa would have been the right destination for Socrates, but it appears that he's considering other offers. And of course, we don't know what the financial details are of those other offers and whether that is playing a part, whether, you know, he's obviously thinking about his young family and where they live and all of that, which obviously plays a part in one's decision as well. So, yeah, that's the update on Socrates. So it seems like for the time being, until the Greek defender makes up his mind, Genoa will call their interest in him. Somerset Gunnar in the chat says, where would one be able to follow the Italian league now? First of all, you can follow Simply Serie A, the Italian football podcast presented by yours truly. We are streaming the shows on this channel as well, so you can catch us normally on Monday mornings, myself and Vittorio Campanile, Italian football journalist based in Rome, who joins me for our discussions on a weekly basis. So you can check it out there. But in terms of televised coverage here in the UK, you're looking at Premier Sports. You know, yes, it's another subscription. It's something that you're going to have to pay for. But for me, I listen, I'm a massive fan of the Italian league, so it's worth it for me. And I also work on it, so I kind of need to have that access. But yeah, Premier Sports, they show a really good amount of Serie A games each weekend. Obviously, the big ones in the big slots, the 7:45 on a Sunday. They show games early on a Sunday as well. They start from 11:30 a.m. on a Sunday. So there's plenty of action to get your teeth into. But yeah, Premier Sports is the place to go if you're talking about UK-based coverage. Talawa Shaw asks, are there any hidden gems in Serie A that you would have at Arsenal? Yeah, there are a few. But you know what? I'm going to save it and I'm going to make a note of it now. And we're going to do a podcast specifically on that because there's a lot to go through. So yeah, we'll definitely do that. I've made a note of it and we'll have a look. Yeah, 28 Guy Happy also points out in the comments that Live Score show a lot of the Serie A games. They do, but that's only available on your app, on your phone, or I think maybe, I don't know if it works on an iPad, but it works on your phone. Do you really want to be watching games on your phone? Me personally, I hate it. I can't stand it. I never get these people who sit there watching things on their phone like this. It drives me mad. I look at my phone way too much as it is. So yeah, but that is an option as well if you want to sort of test the waters first. Question from one of our members, Rahil Durrani says, who would you rather have winning the league, United or Liverpool? That's easy for me, and it's Liverpool. And I know sort of Arsenal fans of a slightly older generation have often told me that they find it weird that I don't have this major hatred for Liverpool. It's not that I like Liverpool by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that I hate United more. I grew up during an era where the Arsenal United rivalry was at its absolute peak, the Fergie Wenger days. I could not stand them. I still can't stand them. And that would always stick with me because of the era I grew up in. So for me, that's an easy question. I'd rather Liverpool won it than Manchester United every single day of the week. Let's see what else you guys are saying. Edward points out that Inter take on Juve this weekend, which will be a massive game towards the top of the division, and he's absolutely right. Somerset Gunnar, if you're going to be tuning into Serie A at some point this weekend, that is the game to watch, Inter versus Juve. Also, there's a small matter of the Rome derby on Friday between Lazio and Roma as well, so check that one out too. Some really good games coming up this weekend. It's a great weekend to jump on the Serie A bandwagon if you're planning to do it. Liam Rushworth asks, does Gabriel get straight back into the team when fit? Interesting one for Mikel Arteta, isn't it? It's a difficult decision for Mikel to have to make. I mean, me personally, I wouldn't disrupt the defence right now that I think is doing really well. I think obviously with Gabriel having been out with COVID, I know they talk about the symptoms that he suffered just being minor symptoms, but you can still be physically impacted by it in the sense of the tiredness, the fatigue. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gabriel was left out for one more game before Mikel Arteta has a real decision to make. Look, it could go either way. And I know it sounds like I'm sitting on the fence again, like I did on the party thing earlier. But, you know, does he get straight back into the team when fit? For me personally, no. I think that you have to, you know, we talk a lot about culture at the football club and that winning culture. I think a lot of that is or comes from or will stem from picking players on merit, and when they're playing well, giving them opportunities, and when they don't, then pulling them straight back out of the team. I don't think either Rob Holding or Pablo Mari, I know David Luiz played the other day, but I don't think he's first choice anymore, my opinion. But I think that I don't think Pablo Mari or Rob Holding have done anything that warrants them being left out of the side. There you are. I wouldn't bring him back in, me personally. Let's see what else you guys are saying. A lot of Serie A-based questions since we opened that can of worms. Who do I support from Serie A? I don't support anyone. I just enjoy the league as a neutral. I think it's fantastic. And I think that actually makes it more enjoyable. But if I had to say, name one team that I have a soft spot for, I probably lean towards AC Milan, just because I respect them as a football club and everything they've done over the years. The San Siro is my favourite football ground in the world as well, which obviously helps with that as well. But yeah, that's where I stand on that. One more question on Serie A before we go back to everything Arsenal. How did I get into Serie A? I just loved it as a kid. You know, I loved it during the sort of Channel 4 Football Italia days. I'm sure some of you will be old enough to remember that with James Richardson. I just loved it. What I love about Serie A is I accept and acknowledge that in terms of levels, it's not the best league in the world anymore. I think during the 90s and the early 2000s, it absolutely was. It was the best football league on the planet by a country mile. I think it lost that, obviously, with the whole Calciopoli scandal, that obviously damaged it as a brand, damaged it in the eyes of many. But for me, what I love about Serie A, and I think it has probably more than most of the other leagues, you know, you're talking about history, you're talking about huge football clubs, Milan, Inter, Juve, Roma, Lazio, Napoli, Fiorentina. You're talking about huge football clubs who have got incredible histories. The rivalries are historic. The stories, the backstories to everything are amazing. It has this old school feel to it that the Premier League maybe doesn't have anymore. You know, you look at the German, like people talk about the Bundesliga, and you're talking about RB Leipzig, a club that were founded just a few years ago. I mean, what history is there when they're punching at the top of the table? I just don't like that. I'm very much a bit of a, you know, what's the word? I'm a bit nostalgic when it comes to football, and that's why Serie A appeals to me. I did lose touch with it for a few years. I still followed what was going on from a sort of slightly stepped back position, but over the last 3 or 4 years, I've gotten really back into it. I think it's changed as well. As a spectacle, it's become a lot more entertaining. You only have to look at the scores after every weekend to realize that. I've kind of fallen back in love with it, and I'm delighted to say that I do quite a fair bit of work on it as well, which is great. Happy that it is on the up again. Lots of you are talking about it as well. Channel 4 Classic, always liked AC Milan. Russ Morgan says, who's your favourite ever player from Serie A? Mine is Batigol. He's definitely up there for me. Ebi Vanda says, Juve, Del Piero made me love the club. Marco Williams saying, 90s Serie A was peak. Ben Taylor, Channel 4 and Eurosports. Big hello to Tazella says, hello, Harry. Love the work rate. Golazzo, Channel 4 made us all love Serie A. Yeah, it did. It was fantastic. Those were the days, eh? Those were the days. My favourite player, though, from Serie A, it's a hard one, man. Alessandro Del Piero is definitely up there for me. Paolo Maldini's up there. I used to love peak Pavel Nedved. I thought he was a great player as well. You're talking about Andrei Shevchenko. You're talking about No, that's mad. That's points out Diego Maradona, my favorite player of all time. But unfortunately, I didn't catch him playing there because I was too young. But obviously, looking back on it, unbelievable, unbelievable football, unbelievable talent. And yeah, I mean, that's what I'm going back to that point about the history of Serie A and why that makes it such an incredible league. When you talk about the Maradona story and you talk about the rise of Napoli during that time, you know, it's the politics behind it. It's the history behind it. It's that rivalry between the north and the south of Italy that really adds to that story and creates that story. And so for me, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about when I say that Serie A has this amazing history, this deep history that some of the other leagues don't have. And that's what makes it great. I think the Premier League had it, but I think it's been saturated a little bit by sort of just the way the modern game's gone. You could argue it's a bad thing that Serie A hasn't completely moved with the times, but I think it's a good thing because for the football purists, the football lovers from the 90s, you look back at it and it gives you this feeling of that you don't really get nowadays. And so it takes you back to a time, I think, that was better in terms of football, simpler. So yeah, that's me on Serie A. I feel like I've blabbed on about it for a long time, considering this is an Arsenal podcast. But you asked, that's what you got. There you go. Let's touch on a couple of other reports that are doing the rounds today before we wrap up this show. But before we do that, quick reminder, if you haven't already, make sure you smash the like button, subscribe to the channel. If you fancy becoming a member, if you're interested in finding out what that means, what you get from it, click the link in the description for more information, and you can have a look at the three different tiers available and decide which, if any, appeal to you. And if you fancy jumping on board, getting access to some perks, but at the same time supporting me to bring you more content and higher quality content, and to continue doing what I love, which is this, please do check it out, see what you think, and we'd love to have you on board. Right. Those couple of reports that I just wanted to quickly touch on. There's been a lot of reports of late linking us with Manos Solomon, the Israeli international, of course, currently plays his football for Shakhtar Donetsk. According to The Guardian, a summer move for Manos Solomon is on the cards. Now, his agent and representatives have been quoted of late saying that actually they would prefer a summer move for their client away from Shakhtar Donetsk. I'm not 100% sold that on this one in terms of how reliable it is. He's a player that has caught the eye in the Champions League playing for Shakhtar Donetsk. I'd imagine he's going to have a number of suitors come the summer. I think that the asking price from Shakhtar will be around about the £20-25 million mark. Will Arsenal see that as a worthwhile investment? Will they see other areas in the team as a priority and decide against doing that deal? Quite possibly. We don't know. But I just wanted to bring to your attention that according to The Guardian, a summer move for Manos Solomon that would see him come to the Emirates is on the card. Another report is with regards to Buendia. I feel like we've been talking that one to death over the last few weeks. We heard that the interest had been dropped. We heard it was back on, and now we're hearing it's dropped again. So I don't know really where to go on that. But at the moment, my understanding is there is no movement on the Emi Buendia thing, and I don't expect it to happen at this point. But of course, it can change. It can change. That's what's beautiful about this game. Things can change like that. So we'll have to wait and see. Right, that brings me to the end of this live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, whereby we discussed a number of things. We discussed Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's opinion. We touched on some of the latest reports with regards to some of our transfer targets. We discussed the future of Socrates. And we also, unexpectedly, but that's the beauty of having a live chat, and that's what I love about interacting with you guys, unexpectedly, we discussed some Serie A as well. Right, catch you all later on for our second stream of the day. Come join me at 4:30 p.m. Or if you're listening on the podcast, it'll be available first thing tomorrow morning. My chat with Dan Mountney, of formerly of the Islington Gazette and now of the Gooner fanzine. He's a great journalist with lots of experience covering the Arsenal. So I'm sure he'll provide us with some great views and some great insight. Until then, take care of yourselves and stay safe. Cheers.
Listening to the Chronicles of a Gooner, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.